ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Nikita Thakrar. She is the co-founder and director of Included VC, the first of its kind global VC fellowship. It's a unique venture capital MBA for individuals from diverse communities that are often overlooked or excluded, providing access, opportunity, and knowledge into the world of venture capital. We'll be exploring the work she's doing and also looking for diversity and inclusion lessons that other businesses can put into practice. Nikita, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Gabriella. It's genuinely lovely to be here. A bit rainy in London, so let's make this magic happen.
All right. Excellent. The issue of diversity or lack thereof in the VC community is well known, as a group VCs tend to be white and male. Further, because people tend to find a greater level of comfort when dealing with people that they feel an affinity for, the people funded by VCs tend to look a lot like the VCs who invest in them. So if who you know and the networks you can tap into is sometimes as influential as what you have to say, diverse businesses are often locked out every step of the way. Now, your Included VC program has set out to change this vicious cycle by changing who's included in the ranks of the VC population. But before we dive in, what is the as-is world of getting a job in the VC world look like?
Thanks, Sarah. For anyone that didn't catch that was a great pun. I'm a big fan of puns. So I think you hit all the right points. The world of VC is largely homogenous, and the stats, if I can, it's kind of 70% white in the UK and USA, 80% male, and in America, approximately about 40% hail from just two academic elite institutions, Stanford and Harvard.
Wow.
And taking a second for that to sink in, we're not saying it has to be 50-50, but that is a huge difference. And then the more shocking stat, which I think and hope most people are familiar with, is that only approximately, the number is now 3%, was 2%, and it's falling again, as venture capital funding goes to women. And if you really look at that, that's not even anywhere near 30%. That's not even 40. That's not even 50. It's the amount of VC funding, for example, that one company got last year is how much in total went to women.
Wow. It really is stunning. So the job, getting the job in the VC fund itself, is it just former rich entrepreneurs, successful Wall Street guys who are branching out into something new? Or is it its own career path, sort of an entry-level job, like I'm graduating from Stanford and I right away am going to get a job with a VC? Are there entry-level jobs in the VC world?
It's really strange. So I'll be honest, it differs continent to continent. So Asia is very different to America and the UK. And I'll predominantly concentrate on the Western cultures that I know. Just to give you a bit of context, we're looking at a system that is generally 100 years old, because before it was called VC, it was, you know, something else. But if we look at the last, you know, 20, 30 years or 20 years, especially in Europe, that VC has been really quote unquote popular, what you see is those individuals that started the fund, they'd exited the company. So let's say they started the fund. Mm-hmm. They then hire their friends. And when they go to hire for entry-level jobs, or what we class as entry-level jobs, they then go to their university alumni. So this started like years ago, who then fund companies that look like them. So when these people exit their companies, they come and work as entrepreneurs in residence, and they'll then invest in the same. So that circle just never stops, right? The inflow of humans never stops. You've always got a friend of a friend or a friend's son and in a way you can't really penetrate the circle because it never ends. There's no gap to penetrate.
Right. So if the as is a bit of a closed loop, can you take us through at a high level how you then came to conceive of Included VC?
Ah, okay. That's interesting. So I would love to take all the credit. But
take the credit.
But I've got to be honest and start with, there were two amazing gentlemen at Notion Capital, a B2B SaaS fund based in London, who were really sitting there one day and thinking, why does everyone we invest in look like us? And why does our team kind of look like that, and what can we do tangibly to change? And I met them and we all got together, and amazingly they went to a couple of other funds in Europe, very pan-European, and said, hey, we've got this idea, like it's called Included, and we didn't even have a logo then. I remember at that point it was an idea on the back of a napkin. I kid you not.
And so it really was, you bet, napkin scratches, right?
Yeah, it was like, well, let's do something, right? But tangible, not just like, you know, put on a webinar, write a book. It's got to be tangible. And I think most people thought the idea was crazy. There are a group of funds, which I will talk about, who with just this idea, with no logo at that point, said, yeah, right, is this going to change the industry? Are we going to start trying to do something? And the answer was, yeah, let's try, right? And that came together, the brainchild came together, and we got these amazing funds on board. And I kid you not, it started as it went. So we were developing the content as and when it was happening. And it's funny to say that now after a year, but I'm happy to say it was like a startup. We didn't sit there for a year, and this is kind of important to me, or 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, and say, let's do something and polish it up and let's do the PR around it. Honestly, it was on the back of a napkin, which went to an Excel Google Doc, and that's how Included VC started.
Well, so that's, so many things about that are remarkable. What you have then are some people who looked around and said, everybody looks too much like us, and we want to change it. And that's a remarkable amount of self-awareness, I think. And then I guess that explains where my next question was going to be, is if the problem is a closed loop, how do you get access to the people you needed in order to even fund this and get this off the ground? It sounds like it was people who looked around and actually became self-aware that these are the people who have access. And it was a matter of the people who have access deciding that they needed to change things up. We all know diverse companies, diverse ideas tend to be more successful. So this should be something that people want to do. Were you going around and pitching people? What was the pitch like? I mean, how was it still? Was it really just a pick up the phone networking type pitch, or did you go in with your deck and what did you have to sell? What was the strongest selling point?
So honestly, I think the deck came about 3 months later. I kid you not, the deck, one day I had a deck and I was like, oh, this is interesting. But I'll give you the general gist, which is Stephen Millard, he is one of the partners in Ocean, and Chris Dotman genuinely picked up the phone. And these weren't even friends, best friend VCs that they kind of knew them every day. They picked up the phone and said, hey, we have a problem, right? We want to do something about it. And should we do this together? And honestly, the answer was a resounding yes. And I have to give, you know, and to give you the pan-European context, we have Creandum, who's based in Stockholm and has offices in Berlin. We've got K-Fund based in Spain, Seedcamp based in London, NN based in Prague. We have Point Nine, again, based in Berlin. We have Wilson Sassini, a law firm in, you know, Silicon Valley and here that said, yes, we want to be part of this. And Daphne in France. So again, it wasn't just a few London funds coming together saying, you know, let's do something in London.
Right.
And I'm happy to say it here first, because this hasn't been put out yet, but we have M12, which is Microsoft's venture fund, joining us this year, which is amazing. And our newest kind of partner jumping on board this month is HSBC.
Wow, that's huge.
Oh, and I don't want to leave out the amazing CVC Santander Innoventures, again, based in London and Madrid. You know, Gabriela, I've got to tell you, I don't think these firms at the time even understood there was any PR or marketing. They were not doing it for any kind of, it wasn't a signaling, a virtual, you know, it wasn't like we're going to signal this and it's philanthropic. It was like, we need to change. The industry needs to change. It's going to take 7 to 10 years, because that is how long it takes in this insular kind of world. And we've got to start today. And maybe we won't see the results for some time, but that's okay, because we've got to start somewhere. And most of the individuals funding this, if I can say, are predominantly the typical VC.
Well, that's what's interesting. What I would like to do is, it's been described as sort of an MBA for VCs. Can you explain what kind of things, you're in the program, what do you learn?
Oh, it's my favorite bit. To start off with, we have about what I like to call six components, six buckets. You can call them whatever you want. If you have another sexier word for it, please do let me know. I'm working on it. But so we have six buckets. And to paint a picture, I'll kind of name each one and then we can go through them a little bit more in detail. And the basics start from the foundation. Like, what do we need to know? Like, what is the maximum we need to know to understand this topic? And every month there is a new topic that we go through. So it could be how a fund works, how you can add value to portfolio companies, how cap tables work, the legals behind a fund. So every month is a different kind of foundational level of learning on its own. And that kind of brings you up to speed on, this is the minimum I need to know if I was like a first year analyst or if I was going into the field. And I can hold a conversation, I can understand all the terms.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We then go on to the second bucket, which is the coaching and mentoring. So we actually, in Included 2020, we had an executive coach and all fellows went through kind of their drive, their mission. It's confidential, so they can talk about anything they want. And we also had one-to-one mentoring with the investors and group mentoring. So you've got access directly with these investors and you can ask them any question that you want. And no question is silly because you're genuinely learning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The third bucket then goes on to my favorite, which is deal flow sourcing. So it's all well and good going onto webinars and learning these masterclasses and deep dives and mentoring. But what about the actual job? Because is it just sitting behind a really nice chair in a nice building saying, and you know, finding companies that come to you and saying, yeah, no, I like you. No, I don't like you. That's not the job, right? You're not sitting there in your amazing vests and you know, you've not got a money machine next to you that you're just printing out. It's not Dragon's Den in a sense, right? You've really got to go out there and hustle and find the deals and debate the deals and kind of understand industries. And so we have this deal flow sourcing mechanism where fellows come in with real companies that they source from their communities and their regions. They then write investment memos on them and debate them and learn about new industries in the process.
Can I just jump in? So just to make utterly clear. So these are your fellows. These are the participants am I understanding that properly? They have companies that they are identifying.
Okay. Yeah. And because we're saying that if you want to mirror what it is like to be a VC, you've got to go out and actually find the deals.
Okay.
Something that I think isn't often shown in venture is most deals you will have to go out and find, because you will not know about them. Mm-hmm. And by the time you know about them, it might be too late because someone else has already invested them.
Right.
And that's fascinating, right? So imagine sitting there going, okay, I've got to submit a deal this month, right? And other fellows are going to be reading about it. They know it's your deal.
Right.
So it's this pressure. And after they've debated it and kind of thought about the deals, we have a mentor joining the call to say, okay, this is all your ideas and this is how I would have looked at it.
I see. Now, is this also... these are real companies. These are real companies looking for money. Potentially, then they're getting exposure through this program, you know. So is that also a component part? I mean, it's almost from the get-go, you're changing who is even being surfaced.
In all honesty, this year for us, we didn't, you know, we weren't included. We at that point, it was just about learning and there wasn't a scout model and things. But
okay.
The gap we've had from the fellows and future fellows actually is we would love to kind of have companies from our communities and put them in front of partners and other VCs. And so I think this year we're going to be looking at a way of bringing that in and bridging that gap, because that is something I'd love to see as well. But the first year, I think we were really focused on the learning aspect of it and not trying to. So just so making it kind of what you call, is this an industry I want to learn about? And more so then is this one that, you know, should we send it to a partner to invest in and creating that kind of vibe?
Right.
Yes, 100%. I think there is something to be done there and something we can definitely do. So yes. Mm-hmm. And then going on to the kind of last few buckets. So there's two more, but they're not as sexy. So the last one is we have, irony, COVID dependent. We have two in-person retreats. So we had one in Berlin last year and this one got postponed. again. Mm-hmm. And now I think 2021 sometime. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what happens there is all the events the VC supporting, including VC, come. We've got all the fellows from all over at that point, all over Europe and now all over the world. And they come and meet each other and they network and they talk to each other like equals and they get to know each other. And the feedback we got from that summit was, A, it was magical.
Right.
Genuinely. And two, oh, they're human like us. Like,
right.
We can do this.
Right. It's not so scary. They're not. Yeah. It takes a little of the mystery out of it all. Mm. So just to sum it up. So it looks like it's basic learning, sort of to get people to the point where they are able to carry on the conversation and be in the room and speak knowledgeably, coaching and mentoring, deal flow sourcing, summits. And the
last one, I feel a bit, when I talk about it, I feel a little bit of sadness. Is it's called Included X. And the whole premise of that was that you'd partner with some fellows in your country or your city or whatever felt right for you at the time. And you would go out and get together and host an event and teach people in your communities about venture capital. And the irony of the whole thing is that they were supposed to start, the ideation started in March. The deadline for ideation was the 31st of March.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so it didn't happen, but I'm confident that in 2021, I'm hoping the 2020 fellows and the 2021 fellows will do something together to make it even better.
Yeah. This is reality. Unexpected things happen. How do we roll with that? Okay. So we understand the program. We understand the structure. Let's start with how you select who's in the program, because you do something that's really different. And can you describe how you avoid unconscious bias in your own selection process?
This one, it's really interesting take, because when we started this, we knew that we were going to be, you know, going into, let's say you and I post on LinkedIn, the people seeing it will be people that follow us and our friends, right? And then that kind of perpetuates the whole way through, the people that like that see it. And it's kind of a never ending loop again.
Right.
And what we thought was, how do we change this? I spoke to some people in the ecosystem. They told me about this tool called Be Applied. And if anyone is listening to this, I encourage you to check it out. And that team, how it works in the first stage of Included VC is you have to answer 4 questions and they are assessed independently. So not just we hide your name and age and things like that in university. We don't collect that, any of that, actually. It's what happens is you answer a question independently and 2 people assess that question. And then another 2 people assess your other question. And then the whole score, they do some magic in the background and then it comes back with a score.
Now, are these are human assessments and these people at Included, or are these totally external people?
You know, all the venture partners are included and their teams.
Okay.
So all the way from managing partner to the community manager, everybody pitches in. And what's fascinating about this is that we don't collect university. We don't collect we don't see your full name. We don't see anything about you. So I have no clue who I've even emailed to the second stage.
It reminds me of the blind auditions that orchestras started, you know, that initially people are like, well, it just so happens that the people who are really talented at playing the violin all look this way. And that when they started doing auditions where they couldn't see the person and all they could do was hear the playing, it really changed who they picked. And similarly, this blindness. And what I like is you don't even put a thumb on the scale to give a leg up to anybody, that it's purely blind.
Even friends. Like, I can't tell you, I've had emails, I get texts, right? They text me saying, hey, I applied. I didn't get through. and it's really funny because it happens quite often last year and this year, where I would, and even friends of Included, friends of the partners, there is genuinely no, we will not know who you are until the only time we see you is once you've gone through the phone interview. And again, you know, we can figure out if you're male or female by your voice, but hey. And then the only time I know who you are is when I see you on the last round.
Wow. And these questions, they're values-driven questions, is that right?
Yeah, we really want to get to know you. So like, what's, you know, stopped you breaking into venture? Why are you extraordinary? Last year, we asked about your resilience, your learning style. the lack of a better word, hustle. How do you have, you know, analytical skills? We're not looking for numbers and cap tables and what uni and financial modeling and all of that. I feel like we can teach, but we're really looking for who are you as a person and how can we contribute to you and you to include it.
Well, that's so great. And I think that that's one of the things that when I had a business for years, I always said, you know, it's all about the casting, you know, that I can teach you almost anything, but I can't give you motivation if you don't have it in you.
Yeah.
And I can kill motivation. I can kill motivation. You can crush somebody, but you can't engender certain things if they don't have them. And so it's finding those things that I think is so important. And I think that this approach is something that a lot of businesses could do. And I really think it's a great way when people are looking at, you know, not just cultural fit, but cultural add to, you know, that this is a real benefit. So you've gone through this process. What is the profile of your newest cohort? What do you look like?
So today is the first day I've been telling people they've been selected, and I cannot tell you their reactions. It is, it's a feeling you get in your stomach and you're just smiling the whole way through because they're so different from each other. For this year, to give you some context, so last year's cohort, and this stat just shocks me every time I look at it, or surprises me, in fact, is the number of applicants applied at the blind stage was only 30% female, who identified as female at that point. Mm. And that was, you know, for a lot of people, so that's a good number. I felt like that I wasn't as high as I wanted, and everyone around me was like, no, it's brilliant. But 60% of the cohort is female.
Wow. That's impressive. That's really impressive. Wow.
And to think, because there was no way, they were not being biased against any point until, you know, until they
or biased for. That's what's interesting. Yeah. That's what I was saying is you weren't putting a thumb on the scale. And so this was blind and they got through. And that's interesting.
Yeah. But also, Gabrielle, I could have gone the other way, right? I could have ended up with the typical VC profile and, you know, it could have been 29 of them. And so this year, we've decided that we're going to add global spaces on. So we have a cohort of 30 in Europe and then we have another 20 globally. And it's approximately, the numbers are kind of about there. We had this year was 40% who identified as female. So 10% growth. Yay. And approximately 50% or just above are the ratio this year for male to female. Mm. We have approximately about 30 plus cities and 20 plus countries and about 25 nationalities. So very diverse in whether they're neurodiverse, whether they have a disability,
I saw that on your website and that 10% of, I think this must have been the previous cohort, were neurodiverse. What does that mean?
You can say neurodiverse, neurotypical, all of these things, but there's many terms that go under that umbrella. It's not just one thing, but a few of them, you know, are the dyslexia, autism, ADHD. And it's fascinating because it just showcases that there are some people that have that kind of atypicalness, but you can't see it.
Right. Right.
But they are exceptional human beings.
Right. What language is the program conducted in?
English. So I will be on, even though it's global, we do say that English is the first kind of language.
Right. So one of the things I'm curious about is how you place people who go through the course. You know, is there an agreement from your supporters that they're going to interview or take individuals from the program, you know, or even if it's not for a job, for an internship, is there some sort of placement after?
I talk about COVID again. So pre-COVID, the answer was yes. They had said that they would offer a internship to an individuals on the fellowship. And so that way, you know, you'd have real world experience and long-term kind of internships. Mm-hmm. And then COVID came and that kind of all washed away for now. So we are looking at included VC 2021 fellowship. So once COVID is passed and for the new cohort. And with that comes its set of challenges, because this year, for example, we've had some success stories. So we've got a group of individuals who are attempting to start a fund together, which is amazing.
Oh, great.
Like, you know, they've met through the fellowship and they're doing amazing things. We have another individual who has recently joined a ventures team at a law firm. We do have one of our partners was, you know, when they restarted Included, they weren't looking for someone, but then they decided they were, and they really, really liked one of our fellows, and she has just started as of this month in that new role. Wow,
that's amazing. The challenge that diverse employees often find in other industries is that once they're hired, there's a lot of pressure to conform to the culture and behavior of the place in which they're working, which makes sense up to a point. But there can come a time when the cultural pressure actually reinforces bias, even though they themselves are quote unquote diverse. And so I'm curious if there is some sort of, if there's some sort of coaching provided to the participants on how to manage it, or conversely, on the organizations that you're teaming with about their own unconscious bias.
Yes. So in a twofold manner, one thing that's really interesting in answer to kind of your first bit about the fellows and them, their culture and how they kind of perceive and portray themselves is that because of the numerous cultures and genders and races and differences, I could say, in many aspects, and age and various other factors, the fellows over the last year have realized their own uniqueness and their own strengths. So even the fellows that thought, do I have to conform, are now coming into their own. And it's happening very naturally, mm-hmm. and very organically, where the fellows really understand, hey, I'm different in whatever capacity, but I bring something to the table. And it's strange that we're talking about this now, because I was talking to two fellows this week, and both of them, in their own ways, we were talking about how they used to change themselves for interviews before or never get an interview. And now they're both saying, we want to be ourselves, because VC is a long-term game. And we want to work with people that are going to understand us and our quirks and our values. And so I think in a very organic way, the fellows have figured out that actually I can be me and I can add value and I don't need to change that. And I can also educate the employee I go on to work with. As for the Included VC venture partners, again, very interesting. One of the venture partners, whenever he spoke and gave examples, always said he. Mm. Just naturally, right? It just happened. And I remember one of the fellows politely just mentioning, hey, it'd be lovely if you could give some female examples, or say she. And I kid you not, from that day on, he consciously, anytime he did a session with the fellows or a workshop or a mentoring session, he really consciously tried to say she.
Well, and language like that is so powerful. It seems like a small thing, but it can be very powerful. I guess I'm concerned or curious, you know, because junior people, and if they're just joining an already existing firm, junior people sometimes have a hard time speaking up without seeming out of line. For example, there was a recent article in the New York Times about Vogue, and how junior diverse editorial staffers were sometimes brought into meetings where the spread was involved with diverse talent. And there, in the reporting, there were instances where these staffers spoke up because they had been invited to the meeting. They spoke up. And subsequent to that, they weren't invited back to the meeting ever again. If you're that staffer and you see that happening, you know, guidance in terms of how to speak up, how to do it. Are there formal conversations? I mean, other than this instance where one of the fellows spoke up to the partner, I mean, I guess it really is around unconscious bias. It's around, you know, how they speak, how they see, what their own tendencies may be. Is that something that you may do down the road?
Yeah, and 100%. So this year, I think it's a lot about the word microaggressions, right? There's things that we don't even see that we're doing. And this isn't directly the fellowship, but it is very closely related. So Notion Capital, one of the founding sponsors of Included, they have someone who is an amazing man, who is their off-cycle analyst. And during Black Lives Matters, he actually wrote them an open letter kind of internally. Mm. And I kid you not, it's now published online, so it's an amazing read. And I remember this gentleman calling me and saying, "Hey, like, I really want to write this, and what should I do?" And I said, "Look, they're a brilliant firm. They are gonna really take the they're gonna see your courage in writing this. And this person has been there for a few months. You know, probably an off-cycle analyst who has not even been there for any longer, and on a contract." And he wrote this letter, and it's very detailed and it's heartbreaking and to read, and it's very eye-opening. You read it and you're kind of, you know how you say your hair stand up on your friend. And he sent this, and the response from the partners was astounding. they owned up to, you know, they didn't know what it was like to be Black in that respect. And he had just written his general feelings towards the whole, what was happening and the ecosystem and everything in general. And they were so supportive. In fact, they said, you know, you should publish this online. And I think it was saying, hey, we see what we don't, we are now seeing what we don't see. Thank you so much for bringing it to our attention. And I have never seen such support. Equally, you've got someone like Creandum, one of the venture partners, who are really looking into their diversity and inclusion practices and hiring practices and figuring out how can we make the loop less loopy, right? How can we put breaks in the loop, right?
Yeah, right.
Can't believe I just said that. But yeah, so I think they are open and receptive. But one thing I do want to say, and I'm trying to be as kind of genuine about this, is these things will take a little bit of time. So
right.
For example, this year's venture partners, they're so open to everything. And then hopefully, you know, in a year, they'll make small tweaks. That's all we're asking. Please make small tweaks, whether it's, I think one of the firms, the country they operate in, it's very conventional to have your picture on your CV.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a convention of the country.
Right.
And now they've said to anyone that applies to their firm, please take that picture off.
Right.
Right. And it's very small, but they go, I truly believe that if every fund, organization, but let's go with the VC space, makes an incremental change every week, every month, but has a target that we want to reach X long term, I think it can change the whole industry.
Right. One of the things that really struck me when I learned about what you were doing is that you're going to the heart of the matter and you're changing who is making the investments, and that that's going to be a very powerful way to steer who gets investment dollars. And it's so smart and so unique. And yes, it's going to take time, but it's going to help move the needle in a really foundational way. And the other thing is that I thought that you probably had worked through or thought about issues that other businesses should be thinking about and how to tackle those things. And so I'm wondering, you know, we've covered about the selection and how that worked. Are there other lessons that other companies, consumer products companies or service agencies, that could be ported over from your experiences? Anything else that you're like, you know what, everybody should be aware of this?
There's two things that come to mind. And one I've touched on quite heavily is the blind selection.
Right.
That is one big, big learning that I've kind of talked about. And the second is something I'm also very passionate about is, and this is something I don't talk about often, is ageism.
It's so funny. I was going to ask you about that because that is something that I, yes, please. So go.
I love it because I never talk about this. I have never talked about it openly. And I've thought about ageism since I was 20, which is a very strange time to think about ageism. Something that I read, and we'll one day talk about this, but is in Silicon Valley, they have a retreat if you feel old in your kind of ecosystem. And I'm not kidding. The youngest person on that retreat is 30.
Okay.
And that kind of silence is just, it's fascinating. And something I believe is when you look at consumer tech, or let's go with the tech industry at large. So that can be anything from venture, but it can also be startups, and it can also be roles where like you're data scientist or you're creative or you're in marketing or events. Everything is geared towards a very young market.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that maybe companies need to think about the fact that this industry, yes, it's sexy and it's cool and it's hip and it's all these things above, but there's something that we've got to talk about is what if you are 40, 50 and you want to break into a new industry?
Mm-hmm.
So the learning from here is I don't think it's ever too late to break an industry. Our youngest fellow this year on 2020 was 22.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest was, I think, in their 50s.
Yay!
and again, it was the norm. I didn't think there was anything I thought was brilliant. Our youngest fellow in 2021, as in our newest cohort, will be 19.
Wow.
And I suspect, I think one or two of the fellows, maybe, I haven't checked their age, so I'm not going to ask, but I suspect maybe in their 50s or early 50s. So ageism is a big thing for me. And so these are the two things I could say. I would say one, let make it blind for everything, but also really think about, are we just hiring younger and younger people, or do we want people that maybe want a complete career change?
Right. Especially for women, ageism, I think, is an issue.
Huge, huge. And I think we don't talk about it enough. I think it's something that we talk about kind of, and I'm talking, when I talk about ageism, just to kind of the go deeper into that. I'm not even saying anyone, you know, 60 and above. I'm saying that there are people that, that get discriminated against when they're 30s or 35 and saying, oh, well, we can find someone that's 20 or 22 or whatever that may be.
Right.
So the VC industry, predominantly you go in at a younger level for early entry roles. But I also wonder, can we change this? And now, have I found the answer? No, definitely not. But I think over the next year, I do want to look into that and see that, can you bring your experience and go in at a higher role? Or can you? There's always transferable skills, which I think we need to look more deeper into.
Well, so interesting. This has been great. Thank you so much for taking the time to share all this information with us today. I really appreciate it. And I think what you're doing is fantastic.
Thank you. They were very thought-provoking questions. I wasn't prepared for most of them, but you've been brilliant. Thank you. And hopefully once this is over, I can't wait to meet you.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time right here on Up Next.